You are now listening to the Sports Life Talk podcast, hosted by Kevin Tumnus and Serge Vasudevic, where life without sports is just talk, on blogtalkradio.com.
This is episode 9 of Sports Life Talk, where life without sports is just talk. I'm KT with my man Serge. Serge, you went to India.
Yes, man. I'm glad to be back, though. It was hot, hotter than a you-know-what, man. It was brutal.
Now, my main question is, any cricket updates? Because you said you were going to bring us something back for cricket.
Yeah. So while I was out there, the team India was actually in South Africa playing South Africa's cricket team, which is actually one of the top three teams in the world. And we were handing it to them pretty good. By the time I came back, out of the 6 times we played them, we beat them 5 times. So they played a series, and, you know, we're just as dominant as we've always been. I feel like India's been number one cricket team-wise for so many years. And it just being able to watch it, just kind of, it's like even though I grew up playing it till, you know, I was 11 when I moved here, you know, it's just like every time I watch it, I still learn something new. You know, and the funny thing is, like, they have a replay system that's actually enforced in to figure out if somebody's out or not. Like, you can challenge it, and the how they review it is just, I'm just like, man, why doesn't baseball have this? Because you could avoid so many little issues by just having a third umpire who's sitting behind a computer screen, and they actually show you and let you hear the person who's doing the review up in the booth. Actually, you can actually hear his voice and what he's watching, and he's asking for you to switch from this angle to this angle, and you as a person that's watching TV is actually watching the same thing he's watching. So it's like complete transparency. And then once he makes a decision, you know, in so that the entire audience, 60, 70,000 people that are sitting out in that field, you know, watching the game, will actually get the alert on the big jumbotron saying out or not out. So I just...
So how long does that process take?
I would say about maybe a minute.
Because the whole thing, they want to speed up the game.
Yeah, so. I know, but... And obviously, it's like it's based off of challenges, right? Or the umpire has to be the one to call for the challenge because it was so close. He makes a little square in the air with his fingers, which means he's pointing to the official way up in the skybox to say, like, hey, this needs to be reviewed because it was too close to call. I don't want to call out or safe. And so it's like you actually are making a decision either way instead of calling it out, and then now you have to change it back to safe, or you call it safe and now you have to change it back to out. You're just pointing, and then they're able to quickly go. And then theirs is actually more, you know, baseball is probably a lot more less when it comes to usually if the guy touched the base before the ball came or the, you know, to the guy's glove, usually those are really the only types of plays that are ever really reviewed. So it should be super quick as far as safe or not. Because I see the umpires now going, you know, two of them get on this headphones. They walk a little over there, and then they're talking to somebody, and they're looking, and then they make a decision. No, like, you don't have to do any of that. It should be just quick on the jumbotron, out or not. Boom, let's keep it going. And it should be really easy with all the technology, and I feel like we still have way better technology than they do in India, but it's amazing that you know, they have something like that to speed up the game, so not keep people bored or anything like that, you know. So it was pretty cool, man. I mean, I had a good time going out there, just being able to vacation, not really do much, you know, went a little sightseeing and stuff like that, but overall it was good to just spend time with family and stuff.
Okay, that was a cricket talk with Serge. We'll have that every now and then.
Yeah, I'll update you guys.
Yeah, hey, that was good looking out. I learned something, because I know nothing about cricket except ESPN Top 10. When, right, I see a guy diving to catch a ball, they get all crunk.
You use gloves and stuff, and it's like, oh, it's actually a lot harder to play cricket than it is to play baseball.
I guess so. Well, let's. We got a new segment that our football talk is going to be called Tackling Life. And since we weren't here last week, we're going to talk about the Super Bowl and our thoughts on it. Serge already knows my thought. I thought it was okay. It was a good Super Bowl. It's just that it wasn't the outcome that I wanted.
Yeah.
I did not want to see the Philadelphia Eagles win the Super Bowl. But hey, as a Cowboys fan, I can admit when I was wrong.
Yeah.
They did deserve it. They had a hell of a season. Mm-hmm. Their coaching staff actually knows how to adjust to injuries, unlike the Dallas Cowboys. So, Serge, give me your comments on the Super Bowl.
Man, I definitely didn't see the high-intensity back-and-forth shootout, you know, breaking records, most yards ever in a playoff game, obviously most yards ever in the Super Bowl. If you would have told me that after the game that Tom Brady threw for 505 yards, I would have been like, well, the Patriots for sure won. But
not only did they win, if he threw 505, you would think they killed the Eagles.
Yeah, and just the way that the game was played, you know, you could tell early, you know, Philly just had a momentum going on with them. But just like Tom Brady always does, you know, brought him back in the game, actually took the lead. And then even when Philly came back down and scored, you're like, probably left too much clock on the time of Tom Brady. But then, you know, that's when what's been going really well and underappreciated about the Eagles is, which is their defense, actually stepped up to the plate and made the right, you know, made the play, and, you know, just, you know, sealed the deal, man. And it was pretty wild to see that. And, you know, I mean, the Patriots still gave their best shot. I got to give it up to Nick Foles. I mean, being a backup quarterback, being able to play that well on that stage with all that pressure, you know, it was kind of like he was playing for house money, and you could kind of see that because nobody's really expecting us to win. Nobody's really expecting me to play great. So even if I don't play really well, okay, that's probably what most people expect. So he kind of, you know, he did his thing. They game planned perfectly to attack Philly's defense. The Patriots defense. And, you know, big ups to the Eagles, man. I mean, first Super Bowl for them. So
what are your thoughts on the Malcolm Butler situation?
You know, I've read like 3 or 4 different stories about what's really going on. At the end of the day, like, you know, what is it, 18 years of Bill Belichick coaching, I got to be able to just rely on his – I got to trust his decision-making, because if they're that successful coming to the point, this point – you know, at the end of the day, he's by the book, and he has a way that he wants things to be run. He expects certain things out of his players. At the end of the day, yeah, it is a Super Bowl, but you know, and it's not somebody that's like new to the team or it's his first year. No, Malcolm Butler's obviously had other instances where he's gotten himself into a little bit of trouble with the team and stuff like that. You know, not practicing hard. You know, there's rumors about, like, you know, he got caught with weed and stuff like that. So who really knows what really went on? But I got to go with Bill Belichick, and he knows what he was doing, because he's not going to just take out one of his, if not his best, you know, defensive back, obviously on the field, if he didn't feel like, hey, you didn't deserve or you didn't earn your spot to play in this game because you made too many mistakes being late. And, you know, not practicing hard and things like that. And so I'm going to go with Bill Belichick on that.
Well, my thing on that, Serge, is let him sit out the quarter. Mm-hmm. Because you're affecting the whole team. Did he try to pull a Nick Saban, how Nick Saban, you know, replaced the quarterback? Oh, I'm going to take one of my best defensive players out of the game. And what happened? The Eagles attacked that corner. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes you can be a genius, and sometimes your brilliance can just come back to bite you in the ass. Right. And that's what it did.
Right.
Not saying that Malcolm Butler would have stopped, you know, a lot, but goodness, you want your best players on the field.
Absolutely. I agree.
So let's move on to our next topic. And I know this is something dear to your heart, your sports heart, that mm-hmm. is. All right. Everyone thought that Josh McDaniels was going to be the Colts' next head coach. And I was going to ask, what do you think changed his mind? But damn that. What's on your mind, Serge?
Man, I've been talking about Josh McDaniels going to the Colts like weeks before. I mean, on numerous of our podcasts where I've been like, you know, itching for him to like, you know, for him to like actually make the announcement before even the regular season ended. Just because it was like just the writing was on the wall that, you know, he was like the main target, and he was also had interest because he wanted to, you know, he has interest in coaching somebody that's young and potentially could be like another kind of like a Tom Brady, I guess you could say, an Andrew Luck. And as the playoff started, then you started hearing like, oh, he did a first interview. It's like, okay, now like, you know, this is pretty much going to happen now. It's just a matter of like when. And usually they obviously won't make a final decision either between the, you know, AFC Championship game and the Super Bowl or right after the Super Bowl. So, and then the reports came out that, you know, he took the Colts job, Matt Patricia, defensive coordinator, took the Lions job. It's like, okay, so this is pretty much done. Like, you know, and then the Super Bowl is done. And, you know, I mean, the Colts even put out a presser saying, like, well, we're having a press conference tomorrow to announce Josh McDaniels as the coach. And then, you know, at the 11th hour, 59 minute, 59 second, you know, dude is out to pull out, man. I was super, super just stunned. I there was really no other word behind it. Is the fact that I was just stunned that this was going on.
So do you think it has something to do with Andrew Luck and his health?
I'm not really sure, because I'm like, what did you not know from the beginning of the time that you actually started talking about this? What did you not know about Andrew Luck that all of a sudden between the day before the Super Bowl, the day of the Super Bowl, and the day after the Super Bowl, that all of a sudden, like, something happened to Andrew Luck that you're like, oh, you found out more information? I just don't think that. I just think that, you know, Robert Kraft, you know, probably talked to him into, you know, kind of reminded me of the whole DeAndre Jordan situation with the Mavericks. Like, you know, he committed, but then Doc Rivers and those players went back and, like, convinced him, like, oh, you know, we'll give you the ball more or whatever. So I think there's some kind of, you know, under the table agreement that he's going to get first rights to be the next head coach of the Patriots once Bill Belichick decides to leave. And for that, you know, I know there's reports also that it was like, you know, he had a hard time wanting to figure out ways to move his kids to from, you know, the Massachusetts area to Indianapolis and stuff like that. But that's just part of coaching. That's part of the, you know, what you sign up for, you know. But I just think holding the team hostage like that, and now, you know, if he would have just said no from the very beginning, then we could have probably gone after somebody and, you know, had you know, be able to, like, really scout and interview multiple people. And so it sucks, to be honest, because I think he was going to be a perfect fit because of his offensive genius that he has. But, you know, like the GM said, the rivalry is back on. So
yeah, because it's probably a blessing in disguise, too, because you don't want a guy that wasn't going to fully commit.
Right.
And you are getting a guy that basically beat him in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So who I feel sorry for are the assistants that got hired.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Frank Reich, is he going to keep those guys?
I don't think he obviously has to, but I think, you know, seeming like he's a, you know, professional person, he'll probably keep them on, but then, you know, he'll probably still try to talk to the organization about bringing one or two of his own guys. And that's the other part of it. Like you mentioned, the assistant coach, because Josh McDaniels was basically told his, you know, the organization, like, hey, I want these two guys also with me. And the fact that they were already on the payroll, and then now, you know, it's like, you know, how do they feel? You know, those guys, too, it's an unfortunate situation. Like, you know, and the fact that I think I do have to blame a little bit on the Colts that, you know, it's one thing for Josh McDaniels to back out. But another thing is, like, you should have gotten some kind of paperwork signed.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, hopefully we'll learn from our mistakes and, you know, something like this will, you know, never happen again. But Josh McDaniels, you know, he better keep whatever job he has, because trying to go somewhere else won't ever be the same again for him.
Exactly. So let's talk about the winning quarterback, the Super Bowl MVP, Nick Foles.
Sir, that just sounds weird.
The Eagles win the Super Bowl, period. It's just weird.
Yeah.
Okay, so should the Eagles trade Nick Foles?
Should the Eagles trade Nick Foles?
Yes.
No. I think the Eagles should keep Nick Foles. I mean, it's hard to get a solid, you know, backup QB in this league. I mean, it's hard to get a starting QB in this league. So the fact that you have a, you know, expert, talented, experienced quarterback who helped you win the Super Bowl as your backup, I mean, I would keep him because you never know. I mean, what if some different injury happens to Carson Wentz next year?
Yeah,
you know, maybe with his ACL now, it could be his shoulder, it could be his hand, it could be his arm. You know, so any concussion, whatever it is, like, and I think it would be in their best interest to keep him. Now, Nick Foles maybe wants to be traded, but I think the Eagles should keep Nick Foles.
I kind of agree with you, but with that said, you're not going to get his true value if you wait later. So you got the Super Bowl MVP as a backup. I'm trying to trade him. At least you can at least get a first out of that. You should be able to get this dude just won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But I'm all with you. You keep him around. Oh God. I don't know. It's the Eagles, man. Now just trade him and Wentz. Let's get the other guy in there. Oh God. The Eagles won the Super Bowl, sir.
Yeah, man. It's 2018.
yeah, whatever. All right, so let's talk about the NFC East. They're the only division in the NFL that every team has won a Super Bowl. So does that make them the best division ever?
I think so. I think I think looking at the tradition of all the franchises, even though like it took the Eagles this long to even win, it's like you still will pick Eagles as a team that you people would hear about, even as a non-football junkie, over, I would say, like the Cleveland Browns. You know what I mean? So there's still teams that, even though they didn't win a championship till now, and you know the Redskins haven't won since what, the early 90s, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
The Giants obviously have the most two recent ones, and the Cowboys obviously, you know, with their dominance.
Oh God, it's been what, 26 years.
24.
Yeah,
24 years. Yeah. So I think definitely it would be. You know, it would definitely see that they are the best division ever in the Super Bowl era.
Okay, so with that said, the NFC East can also be known as the, I guess, the Tom Brady kryptonite, because every time he goes up against the NFC East team, what happens? They lose. The Giants have beaten them twice, and now the Eagles, which I still can't fathom. I can't believe that the Eagles won the Super Bowl. So I'm going to move on. They did deserve it. Our next segment that we're going to bring in is called Down the Lane. It's going to be our NBA talk. So, Serge, are we giving Steve Kerr too much credit for the Warriors' success? Because in the game against the Suns, he decided to let his players coach. Do you have a problem with that?
Yes and no. I did have a problem with it because it's like who you did it against. I just think that if you're going to do that, either do it more than once and then do it also against some teams. Like, they play the Thunder next Saturday on prime time. There's no way that he's going to let his players do coaching in that game. So if you were willing to do something like that, so like, because don't you want your players, if you're trying to make a point with your players, don't you want your players to figure out a way, especially against one of the better teams, to figure out ways to run plays that you feel like, hey, those guys are the ones on the court. They're the ones who know what kind of defensive coverage they're going on. And I think, so that was my problem. But as far as him, actually, the act of actually doing it and letting his players, no, I don't have any problems with that. You know, there's a lot of guys who are, smart when it comes to being able to, like, draw plays and whether it's plays that they maybe even used to run in a different system with a different team before, but they know the percentages of this play working out and the fact that you're able to draw plays and you pretty much got three knockdown shooters that you can pretty much drop the play with. So it's definitely something that can be a problem. Obviously, I see with, you know, other people in the NBA who don't like it, but I don't have a problem with it. I will have a problem with it if you're only going to do it against teams that are like, you know, you're going to beat in your sleep, pretty much.
The problem I have with this, Serge, is it's kind of make a mockery of coaching. Look at the team that he has. They're stacked. So, of course, your job is pretty much easy. You put a system in. You got, what, four of the top 15 players in the league? So you won't see any other, I don't see another coaching staff that has the ability to do that.
Yeah.
Just because of the way the team is stacked. So that's my problem. I don't like it. There's something that should be done behind closed doors. Let's come up with a let's come up with a game plan, not during the middle of the game. It just sucks. It's a slap in the face to the league, especially the Phoenix Suns, for you to do that against them. All right, so let's move on and talk about the guy that did he get slapped in the face, or he slapped somebody in the face? Isaiah Thomas. First, he was traded from Boston to Cleveland. Now he got shipped to L.A. Should we feel sorry for Isaiah Thomas?
I do feel a little sorry for Isaiah Thomas. I mean, the fact that he had to go through all that he did in Boston and playing, after his sister died, and then this thinking that you're going to be with that franchise because you kind of proved yourself, got, top five in MVP voting, and just not ever really seeing a writing on the wall as far as there might be a chance that he might get traded. And then all of a sudden he gets traded. Then he's like, okay, I got traded, but I got traded to the Cavs. I go play with LeBron, probably compete for a championship. But then I have a hip injury that I don't even know what's going to happen and how long it's going to take me, or if I'll ever be back to the Isaiah Thomas that was a, league MVP candidate. So, and then, the way that, because he's somebody that has to have the ball in his hands. He can't play off the ball. Like, that was one thing that you can appreciate about Kyrie, because he figured out a way to play with LeBron and made the necessary adjustments, because when he came to the league the first 3 years, he always had the ball in his hands, but because of the skill set that he presents, he doesn't have to have the ball in his hands as much. He can catch and shoot, but then he also is way better one-on-one with all the handles and things like that he has, and picking and choosing his spots, and they're right there neck and neck as far as being able to play pick and roll offense. So then to get traded again, and then you got traded to the Lakers, which, hopefully it works out for him, because at the end of the day, now he has to just show that the rest of the league that, hey, I'm worthy of getting 15 to 20 million a season.
He's not going to get that. And I don't even see him in LA next year.
No way. The only way that he gets to stay there is on like a 1 year contract if the Lakers miss out on all the big free agents. Yeah. That's the only way that would happen. So, I mean, that's just how it is.
So, do you think he's a superstar?
I do. I do think he's a superstar, but if only if he's actually healthy and he can at least be 80% of what he used to be. But, I want to give him the rest of the season to see if he gets his legs under him and really figures out like how to maneuver. Even if, he's coming off the bench now, which I think is probably his ideal role. Because when playing in Boston, he kind of played in a perfect system, because he didn't have to share the ball on the offensive end with anybody else. And, on defense, the defense that the Celtics have, doesn't matter who's out there on the court. Brad Stevens just had a way to use the other four players to basically hide Isaiah Thomas and help him out. I think that he's still somebody that could be a superstar caliber player if he gets back to the health that he was, but it has to be at that level for him to get to continue to be staying at a superstar level, even though he might not even get like that big payday that he was hoping for, because he was talking about bringing the Brick Strut and stuff. But
yeah, I think he is a superstar, but he's like borderline, mm-hmm. just being 5'9", and I think he thought he was bigger than what he was when he went to Cleveland, because he was really just outspoken. I'm like, you haven't proven anything with this organization. It's in Boston, it's different. So he just didn't mesh with LeBron, and hopefully he will get a deal, but he's not going to get the deal that he wanted.
Yeah, and I think one of the other reasons why he ended up getting traded is because he hadn't really proved anything, but he was already doing a lot of talking in the media. I don't think it sat well with a lot of the players, because you're calling Kevin Love out. Kevin Love got a ring, bro.
He has a ring. He has skins, yes.
So he averages 20 and 10. Like, what are you doing? If he's going to start talking, I think it would have been better once he started actually playing better.
Yeah.
But you're actually kind of pointing fingers like, oh, just saying like, oh, we go in separate ways when we hit adversity during the game. Like, you could say that, but at the same time, he never took onus on himself. So like, hey, you know what? We're going to be better because I'm going to be better. Or, you know, I think that's where the leadership side of it comes in. And you kind of made it seem like you're almost to LeBron's equal. I mean, you're not even as good as Kyrie. So you're making yourself seem like you're bigger than you really are. And that's what I had a problem with, as much as I have sympathy for all the other things that he's dealt with and had to go through. Because now he had to, you know, take his family to Cleveland. Now I got to take them from Cleveland to L.A. I mean, weather purposes, it's great. But other than that, it's just like, you know, it's a lot to take on, you know, switching jobs like that, you know?
Yeah. I know that Isaiah Thomas mentioned that he was tired of being traded, but I'm pretty sure we got a guy that's tired of IT, and that's Rajon Rondo. When they met, Rondo's with Sacramento now, correct? With New Orleans Pelicans. So when the Pelicans and Rajon Rondo and Isaiah Thomas met up, it was some beef. And that beef came from the Celtics giving IT a tribute video before they gave Rajon Rondo. So do you have a problem with the way that the Boston Celtics handled that situation?
I don't. At the end of the day, the Celtics organization, you know, it's their decision to make as far as who to give a tribute video for and things like that. And they know that ever since those guys won a championship and they all the big three with Pierce, Allen, Garnett, like they all, you know, eventually left the team, that, you know, it's kind of been an up and down for the organization. And Isaiah Thomas was the first person who kind of came to that franchise who kind of really uplifted the spirit of the team and kind of gave an inclination of like, oh, you know what? We're not that far behind the Cavs as far as competing for the Eastern Conference and potentially competing for a championship. So it's Celtics have every right to do, you know, a tribute video for him. And Rondo just obviously being salty and jealous that he didn't get one, and, you know, he actually helped win the championship, you know, on a team, and he played there for so many years as opposed to Isaiah Thomas playing only for like a year and a half. But I don't think Rondo realizes the impact that Isaiah Thomas made in that year and a half as opposed to all the years that Rondo actually played there. And, you know, Rondo's never going to have his jersey retired there. And so for him to get a, you know, tribute video, and Rondo never really got one, you know, it's obviously not sitting with him well. So, you know, he decided to take it out on the court and, you know, trying to pick him up full court, pressuring him, bumping him, you know, hit him a couple times. And, you know, it's just, you know, just dirty, you know, just being what it is, you know, being what it is. And, you know, I don't think that was a nice thing to do, especially considering you're a professional athlete.
But when has Rondo ever did anything that was professional, you know, besides go out there and help the Boston Celtics to two championship finals and one championship? My problem with this is if I'm Rondo, I would have a little chip on my shoulder, because just think about it. His whole time in Boston, it was always about the big three, mm-hmm. when it's really a big four. So without him, they wouldn't have functioned as well. So I can see why he would be salty and mad, but don't take it out on IT. Take it out on the Boston Celtics. Go there. Try to put up 50. We know you can't put up 50. I guess go out there and get 50 assists, 50 rebounds, or something like that. Don't do that towards him. It's a bad look. So let's talk about the Golden State Warriors. Can any team beat them in a 7-game series once the playoff starts?
I think the Houston Rockets definitely have a fighting chance to beat them in a 7-game series. And I also do think, just because of the animosity that's there between Westbrook and Durant, I think OKC also, just by the way they've been playing, Paul George playing at high level, you know, and then him being able to actually play defense on Kevin Durant, and, you know, Russell Westbrook, he gets up to play the Warriors. And just the couple of times that they played the season, I mean, OKC's, you know, beat them both times, once at home and once on the road. And they beat them pretty handily, you know, again, in Golden State, you know, like what I think it was a week and a half ago. And that's with Carmelo pretty much being out after the first 3 minutes of the, you know, first quarter. So Paul George, you know, putting up like 34, 35 points, Russell Westbrook putting up 35, 36 points. And their defense is underappreciated. And, you know, the Warriors had pretty much all their guys healthy. And for them to be able to compete with them like that, and the Rockets having the best record in the West and in the league, I think those are the two teams that could give them run for their money and actually have a good chance of beating them in a seven-game series. And I will give the Cavaliers a very small chance, but a fighting chance with the current roster that they have now after all the trades to also compete with them in a seven-game series and potentially be able to beat them.
I'm going to go Rockets, OKC. You mentioned Cleveland. I'm going to add Boston in there. You got to have teams that – you got to make the Golden State Warriors play defense. They have to play both ends of the floor, and not a lot of teams can do that. So the team that we mentioned, they're the ones that can actually force them to play the low defense. And I even add another one, the Utah Jazz. They've been playing well of late. Donovan Mitchell, he won the slam dunk contest. He's coming to his own, and that team is really gelling. You add a couple more pieces, and they can really give anybody in the West a run for their money. So I'm going to go with those teams. So let's go back to the tribute that they gave for Paul Pierce. Do you know what happened to the Boston Celtics after that?
They got spanked by the Cavaliers, who just got all these new players, didn't even have really even a practice, and, I mean, they got right out the gym.
So why is it whenever we have, like, a tribute night, and I guess on episode one we talked about rings,
right,
a ring ceremony, why did that team lose?
I think because there's a lot of distraction going on leading up to the game, and I think even the game, the atmosphere, like, there's a lot of people that are there to really witness that particular event as opposed to more about the team that they're playing against. And the other team knows that, and the other team, you know, wants to, whether it's ring night or a tribute, is like, hey, you know, those guys are going to be concentrated on this. Most of the fans are kind of here to, you know, talk about let's come out, you know, and be aggressive from the very get-go and then kind of, you know, put doubt and fear in the other team. And I think when you do that and you play aggressive and you kind of, you know, put the pedal to the metal early, especially in the first quarter, that means you're making the other team have to play that much harder, maybe start pressing a little bit. And I think that just starts playing out through the entire, you know, four quarters. And, you know, it's just one of those things. I think it's a mentally, you know, draining thing sometimes also to just, like, try to put that much more effort into a game that has not just a regular season game, but it's also because of what's actually being taken place around the game for that particular game that ends up, you know, kind of causing that home team, something like that.
And let's talk about that tribute, too, because Paul Pierce didn't want a video tribute of IT the same night as his celebration.
Right.
And I think we talked about that on the earlier podcast, so let's just revisit that. Do you have a problem with Paul Pierce wanting that to be his night and not sharing it with anybody else?
I do have a problem with that because IT were just going to get a tribute video during some time out, maybe before the game, maybe after the first quarter, but I would feel like probably somewhere between a timeout or in the beginning of the game. Like, okay, it's a minute and a half video. All right, the fans get to stand up, clap. Okay, they sit back down. It's back to the game. I mean, you have an actual ceremony just for you. I mean, that includes having the whole court to yourself, being in the center of it with all your former teammates, coaches, people that are part of the organization sitting there on the court, physically on the court with you, and then being able to have your family there. And then after you do your speech or whatever, being able to actually pull down the rope to actually see the banner with your jersey on, go on it and lift it up. I mean, that completely will overshadow what happened with IT's video by the time that happened. So for him to kind of be really selfish in that manner, you know, I just think it doesn't set a good example, because what it does show is true selfishness. And if he really understood that, man, look what I meant to Boston. And ever since I've been here, the city of Boston or that this organization or the fans behind this team haven't really had this something exciting like IT. And so for him to play the way that he played, kind of similar to Paul Pierce and how he gave it all, I think he should have at least respected that. And then Joe, just know that it was just a tribute video that's going to be played on the Jumbotron, and he gets applauded for, I don't know, 20, 30 seconds after that, and it would have been just fine. It wasn't going to take that long. And I made a big deal out of it.
Yeah, I think Paul Pierce is an all-time great player. Where would you rank him as a Celtics all-time great?
Celtics all-time great? He's definitely top five. I would say, you know, I don't think you could put anybody past Larry Bird.
No.
But, and I also really don't even think you could put anybody past Kevin McHale.
Or Bill Russell.
Bill Russell. And I would probably have him right there on the edge, probably with, like, John Havlicek, you know, somebody like that is probably, but he's definitely in the top five. And obviously he has all the numbers to be able to back it up too. And the fact that he has one championship, even though most of those other guys that I mentioned have multiple championships. So Bill Russell has 11. Larry Bird has four, I believe, or five, four. So he's never going to, you know, be that top dog, but yeah, he's definitely in the top five all-time great Celtics.
And I think Paul Pierce's problem is he's a great player. I'm not going to take that from him. He is great, but I think he thinks he's greater than what he truly was.
Absolutely.
And I think that's why he wanted that night, like you said, being selfish to himself. He's a hell of a talent.
He is.
But come on, man, giving up 30 seconds to another guy, and then that way this could have been over with because now they had to do it on two nights. Because I think they end up losing both nights, right? Or did they?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they – so, I mean, come on, Paul.
Yeah, and my whole thing with Paul Pierce is that he was the same guy who had a problem as was making comments when LeBron decided to join Miami, team up with, you know, D-Wade and Bosh. But you're also the same guy who didn't go tell Danny Ainge, like, no, we don't want KG and Ray Allen. You know, I don't want those great guys coming and playing with me. You know, so it's like you can't, like, oh, because they came in a trade – I mean, it was a heist that Kevin Garnett, who he got traded for.
Yeah.
And so if you the only reason you have a championship is because of those two guys being there with you. So you can't devalue or hate on LeBron for actually choosing to go somewhere as opposed to getting traded to go somewhere. You know what I mean? And go play with somebody else. So. It's also like, man, I don't think we can beat these guys. I think he knew that. It's like LeBron is one of the best in the league at the time. Obviously, D-Wade was one of the best at the time. And they put a lot of good complimentary pieces around them. Mike Miller, Shane Battier, you know, those glue guys that, you know, basically helped them win a championship. So, and then, of course, once Ray Allen went there, it was like...
Yeah, they just exiled that man, and he's one of the reasons why y'all got a championship.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Like, Ray Allen, he deserves better. He made a smart decision. If I want to win another ring, why wouldn't I go join Miami?
Yeah, I mean, because it was a lot later in his career. I mean, so it wasn't like Ray Allen was still in his prime. And he knew if he went to Miami, he was going to be coming off the bench. So he actually accepted a lesser role to go play with another team, take less money to go play with another team. And because he knew that he would rather put himself in a position to have another championship and also, you know, having a relationship with LeBron and knowing that this guy is going to always put us in a position to try to win. And all I got to do is when I come in the game, do my part as opposed to I'm going to be starting. And, you know, there was already butting heads with Rondo and Ray Allen. There's a lot of that going on too, so that really didn't probably help, and it made Ray Allen's decision a little easier to make. But
and just think about it, they kept trying to trade Ray Allen. They were trying to trade him. So if I'm not wanted, don't get mad if I go to the prettier girl.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You didn't want me.
Right.
So
like they wouldn't have cared. You know, at the time, you know, if he decided to go with the Spurs, you know, they wouldn't have cared because he's not in the same conference. The most we might even have to think about, you know, facing him is maybe in the finals or something like that.
Yeah,
so.
But if you don't want me, you can't be mad for the next person I'm with. That's just point blank, period. And that was selfish of them.
Right.
All right, so if you haven't heard, it was LeBron James and Kevin Durant. I think they were Carrie Champion doing her little segment.
Yeah.
And they were just talking about life in the NBA and just life in society being fathers. So the Fox analyst, Laura Ingraham, took offense to it, and she said, told LeBron to basically just shut up and dribble. Mm-hmm. So, Serge, I'm going to give you the floor. Give me your comments on this whole little ordeal.
You know, when I first, to be honest with you, I haven't really even watched the video of, you know, LeBron and Kevin Durant talking. I did, you know, kind of read their quotes and stuff like that. But I don't need to even watch what they said, or the fact that, you know, this reporter can come out and say this. And now, granted, she has the freedom of speech, whatever you want to call it, to be able to come out and voice her opinion. But at the same time, you know, she needs to do a little more fact checking, because she doesn't realize that, okay, the person that I'm going to be talking about is actually somebody that's actually in the community making a difference. And, oh, it's actually somebody that's putting $1 million of their own money into school for kids every year for the next, you know, so many every years to put, I think it's 1,700 kids through college, you know, so they're getting benefited, basically getting what you could say is free education that is not scholarship oriented, you know, coming from the actual school. But, you know, he has a program that he's going to, I mean, that's just one of 10, 15, 20 different things that he's doing. You know, so there's stuff that he's doing in the local community of Akron. Even when he was even playing in Miami, he was still coming back during the summer and doing stuff in Akron. Then while he was in Miami, he was doing stuff in Miami, whether it was by himself or with Dwayne Wade. He's done stuff in L.A. because, you know, he has a house out there. So he's done stuff in L.A. He's got the I Promise Foundation with, you know, kids and teaming up with Sprite and stuff like that. So he's also, you know, so popular enough, not just here in the United States, but all across the world, that so many people look up to him. And, you know, it's kind of crazy to know that somebody that's that famous, you know, with the social media age and everything like that, to never really, really ever make any mistakes. I mean, the fact that, you know, he's never really just randomly done an interview where he's just going off and cussing out another player or the coach or the refs or, you know, just overall about a game or, you know, calling people out or anything like that. You know, and so I think if Laura Ingram was to kind of do her homework and really understand, she could have probably still got the same message across without using the word shut up and dribble, because that obviously makes it seem like, hey, why don't you just go back and do your job? And there is a slave mentality connotation behind the words that she used. I know she came out and said that, you know, she wasn't trying to play, but that's not the point. It's not about just, it's not always about the intent, even if you make it seem like there was an intent. It's what you say and how it actually will be perceived. So you have to know what you're saying before you say it.
And just look at who her provider is, who she, the outlet she's using is Fox News.
Right. So, and which is, you know, complete full Trump supporter. And that's fine. If you support Trump, that's cool. That's fine. And, you know, so he's not saying like, hey, all you supporters of Trump, you guys suck and you guys need to get a better life and you guys need to stop supporting the man. Those aren't the words that he was using. He just said that he doesn't, you know, he doesn't coincide with the things that he says or does. He feels like he's very divisive. He makes comments. He sweats on Twitter and is making comments about women. He's making comments about kids. He's making comments about other world leaders. And being in the position that he is as a potential role model, because there is a lot of people who don't say, you know, don't like LeBron. Or there's a lot of people out there who their favorite player isn't LeBron. And maybe it might be Steph. It might be KD. It might be somebody else. But that doesn't mean that he's going to give those people an outlet to be able to get on him for something that, you know, he's doing wrong, because he hasn't done anything wrong in the 15 years he's played. Since, you know, the fact that, well, he always talks about is, you know, coming from where he comes from, you know, single parent household,
not knowing who his dad was,
you know, yeah. And then financial, no financial backings or nothing like that. So it's all based on hard work, putting the right people around you, you know, and then being able to build something that can be, that can last past your playing career and then even beyond, potentially even your existence on Earth.
And that's when you know you've made a real impact. Because think about it, 50 years from now, let's just say he wins 3 more championships. Okay, yeah, in the history books, it'll say, like, oh, he won 6 championships and he played this many years, he scored this many points. But are you also going to be able to talk about the other stuff that he did? Because he did a lot of other stuff, you know, that, you know, can't even be put into words because of how much impact that he makes, because he's doing it for regular, everyday Joe Schmo. And, you know, Michael Jordan, I guess.
I was going to say that he's doing everything that we wanted Michael Jordan to do.
Right.
But Michael Jordan was about his money and his brand.
And the shoes, and the brand of the shoes obviously has made an impact and a cultural impact, but not to the point. And there's actually been some, you know, negativity behind the cultural impact that, you know, when you get labeled in a certain way when you wear Jordans, and, you know, when you are like always spending all your money that you made because the brand is so big that, you know, you go spend all your money on the new shoes that came out 15 years ago, but it's coming out again. You go spend $350, $400 when you just got paid $800 and you got barely enough money to pay your electricity bill. You
know? And on top of that, when kids were getting killed for his shoes, how many times did Michael Jordan come out and speak up?
Never.
He never did it.
Never.
And we have LeBron James, a guy who's willing to put his money where his mouth is, right, with the education.
Right.
He's a family man.
Right.
You, like you said, he's like Obama. You couldn't find anything on him. And right, they're doing everything the right way. And because of the color of their skin,
yep,
is the reason why there's a problem. So I don't care if you are a Trump supporter or not. Why can't we just meet in the middle? What happened to those days where, sir, you can have an opinion,
yeah,
I can have an opinion, instead of us fighting, hey, you say your part, I say my part, let's go have some drinks.
Yeah.
Those days are gone.
Oh, long gone. And as long as the social media age that we're in continues to stay the way it is, and as long as we have a leader, at the end of the day, like, you know, I'm from India, and I have friends who are from other parts of the world, and they always will say that no matter where we live or where we're from, even in those countries, America is still like the prominent place that everybody gets excited about. Oh, you live over there, or you go, you know, I would love to go over there if I've never visited, you know. So, but the fact that we can sit here and know what's really going on in this country, and where we really have a lot of things that are lacking that other countries really don't. Not saying other countries are better than us or they're perfect or in any kind of way. Every country has their own problems, but I think our problems are a lot more identified, and now we have a president that's, you know, just using his platform to, instead of trying to think about the greater good, is kind of really about its own agenda as opposed to the, you know, consensus of the population's agenda. And that's what the biggest problem is. So, you know, if he had enough on the other side to kind of back up, like, hey, he's doing these other things right. And then he's also not, you know, making divisive comments and stuff. LeBron wouldn't have the platform. He would have the platform, but he wouldn't have a leg to stand on and just, you know, badmouth him. But he does have a leg to, you know, and to stand on to badmouth him, because the president is giving us enough out there and putting enough out there for us to see, like, what's going on. And, you know, just in the year and, what, a month of his presidency, like, all the negative things that have been going on, police brutality and, you know, obviously all the shootings and killings in school and, you know, just so many different things that are going on. It's just, it's amazing. So getting back to Laura Ingraham, she, you know, she should have picked her words a little better. She could have still attacked LeBron and say, like, hey, you know, why don't you just keep your opinion to yourself? Yeah, just because you have freedom of speech, you can't just say whatever you want. But
yeah, the comment she made is something that you would tell a kid. Hey, exactly, man, you know, just shut up and dribble.
Yeah,
just, you don't do it to a grown man.
Right.
Because if he says something wrong, crazy to her, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on. Yeah, let's move on. We're going to go to our segment called What's On Our Mind. And I'm trying to think what's on Roy Jones Jr.'s mind, because he is set, getting ready to retire, but he wants one more fight. Serge, is this a smart move?
Is it a smart move? I think.
Now, take, he's 49. He still wants one more fight.
I think he wouldn't have asked to see about wanting to fight again if he really didn't have the confidence and if he's not training and putting in the work to be able to at least, you know, not get killed out there. So I think it's a smart move because it's a chance to make a little bit of that extra cash, you know, going out the back door, and just kind of putting my name back in the pile with everybody else. That's, you know, everybody for the last few years has only been talking about Mayweather, McGregor, you know, those kind of guys as far as in the, you know, fighting game, I guess you could say, in the boxing world. There's so many really good boxers out there, and Roy Jones just kind of wants to just, you know, bring back his name, just put a little limelight, and you know, but hey, if he gets like knocked out really bad,
then, but that's the thing, in his last fight, I think the last couple of fights he's got knocked out,
right?
So what makes him think fighting one more time is going to help anything, unless he's going to pick a guy that's older than him that he can go in and knock out?
Yeah Maybe that's what it's going to take. Maybe if he's smart, that's what he will do, is bring somebody else out of retirement. Like, let's go at it, you know. Bernard Hopkins, maybe. I don't know.
Well, he got knocked out of the ring his last fight. So my thing with boxers, when you're at the very top of your game, that's when you should leave. Don't keep coming back, because I want to remember you with the Roy Jones that go in the ring, talking smack, knocking guys out. Now, yeah, I just remember you getting knocked out, just like Bernard Hopkins. He tried to fight that one guy, I think he was like 25, 27, knocked him clean out of the ring.
Yeah.
I don't want to see you like that.
Yeah.
Stay in commentating and maybe go make another,
really good
commentator. Yeah, make another rap CD, I guess. Yeah. Lead the boxes to the young guys.
Absolutely.
Speaking of another older guy, we got Roger Federer. Boris Becker came out and said that If he were to face John McEnroe and Borg, that he would have lost to those guys. Do you agree with that?
No, I absolutely don't. And it's easy for Boris Becker to come out and say this because he played against those guys in his generation. So, I mean, he doesn't know that that would happen. If he really thinks, I mean, there's a reason why does McEnroe and Borg have more titles than Federer does, you know. Why haven't they won more Wimbledons and French Opens and Australian Opens and U.S. Opens than Federer has? Well, there's a reason why he's got the most, you know. And so if he's hands down the best, then, yeah, I'm not saying he would, you know, beat McEnroe and Borg every time he faced them. Nobody beats every person that they face that's in the top of the, you know, top of the food chain every single time. But, you know, consistently, there's no way McEnroe and Borg would have been beating Federer, and Boris Becker just probably saltier.
Yeah, because look,
really like Federer.
Yeah, Federer was what, 36 now?
Yeah.
And he's still beating some of the younger guys. And our generation is way better, a lot more talent, especially as far as tennis. So for Federer to go out there and still do that, McEnroe and Borg wouldn't stand a chance with him. So like you said, Boris Becker is a hater.
Yeah.
And I guess he just wanted his name thrown out there. Everybody wants their name now.
Be on the news, yeah.
Just be like Trump. Go to Twitter and say it. And just leave that. Leave Federer alone. He's the best player ever to play tennis.
Yes.
I think we agreed on that in our last podcast.
Agreed.
Speaking of one of the best ever, I'm going to talk about Lindsey Vonn. She came in sixth, and she was shaken, so she went to Twitter to tell everyone, you know, of her frustrations. To her surprise, I'm sure, Twitter let her know that the president was watching and that she let him down. And I think she's opponent of Trump. She doesn't like him.
Okay.
So the Trumpsters came out in full force and went after her. Do you have a problem with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a touchy thing because at the end of the day, it's a social media thing. Lindsey Vonn is just doing what she feels like is the best way to connect with her fans, but not knowing that every time you put something out there, yeah, it's not only your fans that are seeing it. It's also the people that, you know, it's like if she would have won and she would have said, I'm so happy that I got to represent my country and this is the greatest feeling in the world. Well, now those people wouldn't have anything to say that are an opponent or opposed to you. But the fact that you lost and that you're actually admitting guilt and you feel bad that you didn't actually, you know, follow suit and, do your part. She shouldn't be surprised that the hate that was coming her way, regardless if she was a Trump supporter or not. And it's just unfortunate because that's the day and age we live in. And, you know, somebody can sit behind a, you know, desktop or laptop or phone and basically, you know, type out 120 characters or, you know, a couple of sentences on Facebook or whatever you want to call it and be able to just go off. and not knowing and realizing what kind of impact that can have on somebody else's psyche. It's just unfortunate, man. I mean, that's just unfortunate. That's just the world we live in. And because of the president and how he is and how he talks and how he's given those people the freedom to just, like, be able to not, you know, instead of being closet commentators, now you're able to kind of be out and open and just be able to say whatever you want. Because what's the worst that could happen? Okay, the other person who reads it doesn't like it. That isn't going to actually happen to me. You know, I'm not going to lose my job over it. You know, I'm not going to, you know, lose any friends over it. I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. I'm not going to lose my Twitter or, you know, Facebook account over it. So, you know, they just kind of just piggyback on how the president talks and then just go at it.
I'm going to read a couple of tweets from her line. A guy said, "I'm still laughing about your karma after announcing your political affiliation. No go, no nothing, long flight." A guy has verified his name is Jim Hansen. The two biggest loudmouth jerks on the U.S. Olympic team, Adam Rippon, I hope I said his name right, and Lindsey Vonn, won zero personal medals. That's about right. Should have kept your heads in the game. I just don't understand that. This is the one time when we all should represent USA, not their failures.
Right. Support.
Support.
Because it's not always about winning and losing. Okay, why is Lindsey Vonn even there in the first place? Because she's good enough to be there.
She's one of the best ever.
Right, so whoever you're around, because you're not in that same limelight and you couldn't be there, or somebody you are close to couldn't be there, somebody you can represent couldn't, you know, that could represent you and your family or whatever couldn't be there, you're basically just hating to begin with. And then now all you want to see is like, no. Like, every Olympics, we got to finish number one. Every Olympics, every competition we enter, we better win gold, silver, or worst case, bronze. We can't be finishing fourth or below in any competition. And it's like, what world do you live in? Because if you have kids that play sports, I guarantee you, you know, 95% of the time, your kids aren't going to win a state championship in football, basketball, whatever it is. You know what I mean? So if you're not finishing number one, you're finishing second or below, it's all pretty much the same. You know, you kind of all fall into the same category. You didn't win, you know. So I just, it's just unfortunate. Like, I keep hate using that word, unfortunate, but that's exactly what it is. And the people that are out there, they're just like continuing to be able to just talk about just random nonsense and don't have any validity behind what they're saying, and then won't actually probably say anything if they were actually put to the fire, but then they know they can just sit behind a computer and actually just type up some stuff, and this will get out there, somebody will read it. Now, but it's just like you read out his name, oh, he's a verified account, you know, he just got, you know, 5 seconds of fame right now, you know, by us even mentioning him.
Yeah, and if you're getting fame from us, that's kind of bad. So let's talk about the acts that happened this week in Parkland, Florida, where 18 people were killed from a, I guess a kid, was he suspended? Was that the thing?
I don't really know. I don't even think he was still in school. He was still in school there or something like that.
I think he may have got expelled, but anyway, he went and, you know, since Trump has been in office, this is the third worst mass shooting in our history. And I'm not blaming it on him, because he is not the one that went and gave the kid a gun and said, go shoot up a school. So I'm not saying that. But when that happens, there's a lot of copycat things that happened. In South Florida, we had a young man who was on Snapchat or some form of social media who had a gun, a rifle, and posted Florida Part 2. I'm glad that was taken care of. But here in Texas, here in our home, in Marcus, South Garland, and Plano West, we had three kids who tried to take guns to school. Mm-hmm. Serge, what can we do to fix this?
Well, first off, to piggyback on that, you also forgot to mention there was an eighth grader who, even though he didn't bring a gun to school, he actually talked about bringing a gun to school. And wanted to shoot cops and other people or whatever. And all of this transpired within 24 hours of the shooting taking place in Florida. So just to get that out there, and then just really for you to understand that in 24 hours after something, a tragic happened, three other people, students around the same age, kids with around the same age, same mentality, same, you know, whatever, was able to bring a gun to school openly, without any regards and no fear And all in within basically like a 30 to 40 mile radius of each other. It's just astonishing. And to answer your question, how can we, I mean, obviously the first thing is easy to say is gun control. But it's like, okay, well, just because you have more gun control doesn't really eliminate the fact of somebody really being able to acquire something. Because, you know, okay, maybe my 17-year-old or 19-year-old, heck, even a 21-year-old, maybe couldn't go get a gun because of whatever regulations or whatever. But say the 20-year-old has a parent who likes going hunting or who just decides to have one or two guns for protection purposes, but somehow hey, they're out of town, figured out where they keep the gun. You know, you can go on YouTube and watch videos of how to load a gun, how to shoot a gun. And so,
I don't mean to cut you off, but the whole gun issue, if you need something for protection, why do you need a semi-automatic weapon that when you pull the trigger, like 50 bullets, 100 bullets come out?
Right. I don't get it. And that is, you know, well, the first thing that I noticed was that, yes, it's unfortunate that, you know, 17, 18 kids, you know, got shot or whatever, killed. But the first thing that I did notice was the AR-15. And the AR-15 was the same gun that the Las Vegas guy used. The AR-15 was the same gun that pretty much all the last 10, 15, 20 killings that have happened that involve more than 1, 2, 5, 10 people are all using the same exact gun. And so it just shows that it didn't take that much. I mean, there's so many different reports that are coming out, like he was able to get a gun without or somebody else like put up a post about I was able to get a gun. I'm only 20 and my license was expired and you were still able to figure out a way to buy a gun. Just a gun, not even an AR-15. Just the fact that you can even buy a gun that easily just shows what kind of problems and issues that we have. But even if somebody doesn't have a gun, that doesn't mean that you can also stop violence. Maybe, yeah, you can stop killings, but I think this real problem, I will always feel like it starts at home.
Yes, I was just about to say
that. And I think, and it's, yes, parenting, not every parent's going to, you know, raise their kids the same way and understood. But one of the bigger issue is when it comes to parenting, the problem that people here especially face is you look at our, say, divorce rates here in America. It is, I know, well over 50%. So what happens with that is, like, you know, I would say the percentages are probably 80 to 90% of the times the mother of the children usually gets to keep and gets custody of the kids after divorce. And the other percentage of the time, the men used to get to keep the kids. By just having that as an issue, you're already eliminating one parent from not being able to be there for their kids and helping them raise kids.
Because by nature, women are more nurturing, men are the disciplinary.
Right.
So
you got to have a balance.
You got to have a balance, and I agree with everything you said. It starts at home. We got to stop letting TV and athletes and social media raise our children.
Yep.
Like, I have two sons. They play video games. They don't do social media because of their ages. I don't let them close their door. I'm always aware of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Am I the best parent? No. But I know what my kid's doing, and I'm letting them know, you know, hey, this isn't right, that's not right. Luckily for me, my kids, you know, they have both parents. So it's just, you just have to be involved in your kid's life. You can't let TV and social media, and like I said, athletes be the one to raise your children.
Right.
Because when that happens, look at the acts of violence on TV.
Yeah.
It's sad as a society, how we just become just weak as far as education. Even with our kids and our learning, we don't care about that anymore.
Right.
It's the kids haven't changed. We've changed.
Right.
And we're softer on them. It's just sad, Serge. It really is.
I think, and when you use the word education, education is probably something you can think about as far as going to school, getting an education, but being educated
yes
is completely different. I mean, you could literally homeschool somebody but make sure that they get their education, but also educate them on life, the importance of it, other people, respect, loyalty, you know, and just basic fundamentals, and just making them understand, you know, what's right and wrong, you know, making them understand. And then, okay, all right, we're having this issue of, like, it's hard to maintain two parents in the home or whatever, but it's the one parent, you know, and then it starts becoming, you have to, like, there's so many layers to this, like, this could be literally, like, you know, a podcast episode for itself, you know, because we could really dive into exactly, like, where the layers are and how deep it can actually go, you know, root into. So if I was to pick an example of, say, single mother, have two kids, you know, one of the child is a boy and the other one is a girl. Well, you know, nurturing with the girl is obviously a little different, but then needing more discipline with the boy, she can only do so much because that's not what she's, you know, she's born to even do, you know.
And let's say this now. Serge and I are not saying that a woman is not able to provide discipline.
Right,
that is
course.
Not what we're saying. We're just saying just by nature, men, that's what we're taught to do, to right. help discipline, to be a protector.
Right.
And when a woman becomes a single parent, now we're putting so much on her plate where she right. has to be a protector, a provider, mm-hmm. discipline, and a nurturer.
Right.
So that's all we're saying. We're not saying that they're not capable of doing that.
Right. And then a single parent that's you know, that's the father, has, you know, had a daughter. Well, you know, when they hit their emotional stage and things like that, and they go through different roller coaster parts of their life, you know, going from young adult into that adulthood stage, maybe even going through relationship hurdles and stuff like that, a man could only talk to their daughter so much to connect with them, then that's where you need the mother's side of it to be able to, and a female side of it, I mean, who already has experience going through that. And that's what the thing is, you know, I think it's something we talked about in previous podcasts, is experience is the best teacher in life.
Yes, yes.
And that experience, mother to mother, mother to son, father to son, and father to daughter, is exactly what's really, really required to really be able to, and not saying that parent, and this is where parents, you know, don't have to be perfect, because if you're together and you're teaching your kids, but you guys aren't perfect, and obviously you're not teaching maybe your kids perfect things, but because of your experience, you can let them know what mistakes that I've made that you shouldn't make in the same situation. And if I were to do something all over again, this is the particular decision I would have made at this point in my life or whatever it is. So, and it's like, once you split that, it's like you're basically always playing catch up. And if you're always playing behind the eight ball and trying, and then you start causing rifts between yourself and your child, and your relationship starts to hinder. And then they want to, say, move away when they hit 18, and then they want to kind of go after their own. And, you know, and that's, and this just keeps on spreading and spreading and spreading. And this is why I think we're just noticing a lot of these issues that are going on. You're talking about, like, you know, kids that are mentally challenged, or they're having issues at home, and parents are divorced, or abusive parents, you know, father being abusive to the wife. And, you know, there's just so many different things that everybody has their own story and why they are. But that doesn't mean that I can't use, like, I mean, I grew up with my parents, you know, my dad was abusive to my mom. So I could have taken after what my dad did and every relationship that I got with a female been abusive too. But no, I knew by just watching with my own eyes that it was a wrong thing. It didn't feel right. It hurt my feelings. So why would I turn around and do the same thing? Because it doesn't give me any gratitude to be able to do that.
But, sir, it's you, you have common sense, too.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't have that. They just go off what they see.
Right.
They can't use their own mind. So that's another problem that we have. And, hey, that's one way to end the episode, wasn't it, Serge?
Absolutely, man. I wish that, you know, we can, you know, there's people out there that are listening to this podcast, and, you know, this kind of topic is something that, you know, it hits home. You know, please reach out to us, you know, send us a message.
Reach out to somebody that can help you. If it's not us, we're more than happy to help you, but reach out to somebody and get help.
Get help, for sure. And then also, like, you know, you know, send us a message about like different things that maybe even we could, you know, myself and Kevin could maybe even discuss and, you know, discuss on the podcast, you know. So, you know, throw out some scenarios, throw out some incidents or whatever. Give us your input. Give us your feedback. You know, follow us on Sports Life Talk on, you know, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And then also, you know, be able to send us emails, sportslifetalk@gmail.com too. And then, you know, let us know, you know, if there's anything that's on your mind. You know, we'd love to share, you know, pick out and certain stories and things like that and be able to share it on our podcast.
All right. Hey, that was episode 9 of Sports Life Talk, where life without sports is just talk. We want to thank you for listening to another episode. And like Serge said, reach out to us. Help us grow our fan base. If you're a fan, just hit us up every now and then. Just see how we're doing. We would love to interact with you. You have a good day, people.
All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle, pay the price. Want a slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Yeah.